This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
I work for an organization called Local Partnerships, and Local Partnerships itself is a joint venture between Treasury and the Local Government Association. And we work with a variety of different organizations, the government, local authorities, local public bodies, and the more general community-focused third sector, to support them in delivering investment in local infrastructure or local services. We don't work for the private sector, and we are not profit-maximizing ourselves. And our core operating principle is very much about sharing the intellectual capital and the learnings that we've had across the public and third sectors. We've been working for a couple of years now on the Social Enterprise Investment Fund, and that has been my role specifically within Local Partnerships. Local Partnerships co-manages the SEIF with the social investment business, and our area in particular has been on the right to requests. So since the summer of 2009, we've been supporting the right to request to access SEIF for funding. For some of the areas that we have come up this morning and some more that I will mention shortly. With the growing interest and announcement around right to provide, which started in the autumn, we have also seen a number of right to provide start to come to light, some who may not have known that was what they were calling themselves at the time, but have now sort of pegged themselves against that bar. And we are starting to work with them also to access the SEIF for funding. As a result, we've built up quite a knowledge base around spinning out and what is needed to do that effectively. So we're quite keen to be members in this series that the Neil Stewart Associates, Policy Review TV, and all of the others who are named on all these posters have been involved with to help share that knowledge and help to grow more social enterprises in this space. What I want to cover this afternoon in a fairly quick time period is very high level, what is the development journey for a mutual or social enterprise? And specifically focus on when will you need funding and what will you need? And the gap that I'm referring to is while you're still within the public sector and before you exit, and also there is funding needed right when you exit before you're actually a viable social enterprise or new company. I then want to talk a little bit about who will be providing gap funding or who the options are and look a little bit at the different types of finance that are available and some of the sources of finance. And I'll wrap up with a few conclusions. Following me will be Ben, and he'll talk probably more about some of those sources of finance a bit from in his presentation. So hopefully I won't cover too much of that. In terms of the journey, and I know it's quite a hard slide to read unless you're up close to it, to see, but there's a couple key milestones to think of, and the right to provide guidance has now been issued by the Department of Health. So for those organizations who want to pursue right to provide as a health or social care enterprise, the guidance was published last week and is similar to this, so they've added a fourth milestone. So we have not quite updated our slide yet, but basically what they've done is they've split the business plan into two milestones, a preliminary business plan and then a final business plan. The first milestone still stays the same around an expression of interest. You then have the preliminary business plan followed by a final business plan, and then the fourth milestone now is launch of the enterprise. The milestones that are up there were originally right to request, but obviously do pertain to any organization that's looking at spinning out. You need to think about what you're doing and then move yourself forward. We've had a bit of discussion this morning around options appraisal and specifically around the audit commission, which I thought was very helpful in sort of illuminating a very specific case study and what they're trying to achieve. And during options appraisal, you need to think about what is the best form for what you want to do and how you're going to do it. In terms of gap funding for that, the bad news is there's probably not much available there. It's your time that you really need to spend understanding the options and thinking about what you want to do. Once you've decided on that and put together a formal expression of interest, and again, right to provide will be requiring this as well, it needs to be approved at an appropriate level. That is clearly very vague wording. Within the right to request, it was very clear the PCT board needed to approve that. Within right to provide, it will vary depending on the organization that you're coming out of. If you're within a PCT, of course, it could be the PCT board. If you're within a local authority, it could be the executive council, but it may need to be a different body. Again, that will depend on your specific circumstances. Once that's been approved, you're then being told to please present your business plan. And for the right to provide, the new guidance suggests a preliminary business plan where you obviously need to think about, and this has come up a number of times today, what's your vision, your mission, your goals, your objectives, what's the market that you're operating in, what are your core services that you'll be offering, and of course the very important financials and governance for your organization. So all of that will be put together into a business plan. This is a key area where external expertise may be needed. So here's where I think gap funding starts to become very important, and we'll talk more about that. Once the business plan has been approved, the new entity moves into a shadow or transition period before they formally launch the enterprise. And that could be for TUPE, for time for TUPE to take place. It's also to enable shadow boards to get into place, to be properly appointed, and to, for the organization to start operating truly on its own. This is another key area where there's a variety of different financing that is needed. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. And then obviously as you launch the enterprise, there are needs there as well. So when you think about each of the different stages, whether it be options appraisal, business planning, shadow or transition period, and launch, there will be different types of funding that you may need. There is not one answer for every organization. So I've sort of started to put a laundry list of bullets on the right-hand side there under what kind of funding you might need or what would you need to cover. But this is not, by any stretch of the imagination, exhaustive. I'm sure there are more that are not on there. Some key ones that we have seen have been internal staff time, so backfill costs. If you have a day job, we've had this mentioned a number of times today, you've got a day job and then you're trying to also launch an enterprise. We have within CEF been able to fund people's time to backfill their roles to free them up to focus on the social enterprise. So that is a possibility. External expertise, we've mentioned as well, which are around tax, finance and accountancy, legal, business planning, etc. I'm sure there's a number of other ones too where external expertise would be worthwhile. It will depend on the organization that you are trying to form as well as the organization you're coming from. As mentioned in the case study this morning, they sort of relied on expertise within the PCT. That may or may not be appropriate for your organization. You don't always need to bring in external expertise, but be, you know, thoughtful about whether or not you need it. Staff engagement. It was also mentioned this morning that getting your staff supportive of your new enterprise is absolutely crucial to the sustainability of the organization. And again, there can be costs associated with that. Depending on the number of staff that you have, it may be necessary to run multiple events, to look at development opportunities, etc. Insurance, a very practical one. I know it's been mentioned this morning as well, and this is a key area to also recognize. Right to Provide guidance has said that clinical negligence, again, for those coming out of the PCT, may be covered with some of the policies right now, but they have not yet extended it beyond that, but they are looking at doing it. There may be some real cost of equipment. Obviously, as you move towards transition and launch, those become more important than at the business planning stage. But it might be for IM&T, it could be office furniture, desks. It could be medical equipment. It could be very specific equipment that is necessary for your enterprise to do what it needs to do. Communications and marketing costs. If you're setting up a new enterprise, you may need some branding for your new organization. You may want to be communicating to your beneficiaries, your patients, or your the users of your service. And not underestimating those costs is very key. Staff and board development, another area, again, as you move through transition and towards launch, becomes more and more important. As you move away from sort of staff engagement, clearly important to continually engage your staff, but now you're looking at developing them into the new enterprise. Assets have just been discussed, and there will obviously be costs to any assets that you want to transfer with you or potentially buy if you find the community assets may not be appropriate and you want to purchase other assets, there will be obviously costs associated. Professional accreditation and membership, depending again on the service that you're providing. And finally, working capital or development capital needs. And this morning was also mentioned acquisition capital. These are all different types of funding that you may need at different stages of development of the new enterprise. Now, who will fund you? From our experience, unfortunately, it's not a terribly long list that we've been able to come up with. Sometimes the parent organization. There are local authorities who are funding some of the development of new social enterprises. Some PCTs have been able to do that as well. It will depend on your circumstances. There might be historic surpluses or projected profit that you might be covering, taking forward, that you might be able to use also to fund some of this development. There are traditional finance providers, some of whom are willing to look at financing some of these organizations. There is pro bono support. There's obviously events like these as well, which are quite helpful. There are bespoke investors, and there are new emerging models for investment. So the types of finance that might be available to your new enterprise will be debt, which is clearly loans, bonds, overdrafts, underwriting, mortgages, etc. Clearly, there are lots of challenges associated with taking on debt. If you are trying to spin out of a public sector, out of the public sector right now, traditional loans are probably not an option for you. A PCT or a local authority cannot take on necessarily open debt in that respect. However, there may also be, as you get closer to launch of the enterprise, debt becomes more of an option for you. Obviously, you need to think about the impact on the balance sheet and what the appetite is of different lenders. Through the right to request, we have seen a number of high street banks offer overdrafts to some of these new social enterprises, as well as other types of loan financing. In terms of grants, there are development grants available, capital grants, feasibility grants from organizations like the Social Enterprise Investment Fund, and our colleagues at the Social Investment Business have other funds that they manage as well, so grants are a potential option also. Some of the challenges associated with grants, they are restricted sometimes. It's rare to get unrestricted grants of money where you can spend it any way you wish, but they may be very specific for costs that you are going to incur. And there may be clawback if something should happen to the organization or the development of that organization. There are also equity or quasi-equity types of financing. Within CEIF, we've actually designed revenue participation agreements whereby we look at the balance sheet of the new enterprise, and for all intents and purposes, it really should be taking on more of a loan or possibly something that would be require payback. But as an aspiring organization, not yet formed, it's hard to make that a reality. So we designed revenue participation or trigger points, whereby if something happens, such as profits of X, you will then start to repay that to the Social Enterprise Investment Fund. There are other types of equity or quasi-equity where paybacks would come in different respects, and I know Ben will be talking about a few of those as well. There are challenges associated in terms of restrictions on dividends and restrictions on ownership. Ownership, you're not, as in the CEIF, we can't, the CEIF can't take ownership into any of these new enterprises. So straight equity does not work from that perspective. So those different options have to be weighed up. So in terms of who provides these types of financing, the government through things like CEIF or Future Builders or Community Builders or the Risk Capital Fund. There might be future funds. It was announced last week, and Jonathan mentioned it earlier, that the CEIF this year will have a minimum of £10 million to spend in health and social care, hopefully around spin-outs, but we are still determining the priorities of that $10 million. There have been mentions as well from the Cabinet Office around a fund to support the mutuals and the mutual program in that respect. Again, we're waiting for more details on that. Some of the challenges with government funding that we face are around annuality. So money has to be spent in year, which can be quite difficult at times. Sometimes the politics get involved. Sometimes there are different incentives for fund managers versus the beneficiaries. And you've got investment approach versus the program model. How do we try to bring that together? And a lot of the work we've done on SEEF has been trying to align policy with the practicalities of spinning out. There's also social venture capital. Bridges Ventures, a very good organization, has done quite a lot in that area. The Baxi Partnership, one of the partners in this program as well. They're not presenting today, but they've been involved before and do offer potential social venture capital. Big Invest as well. And Triodos, we understand, is looking into it as well. And there are also social investors. There are foundations like the Esme Fairburn Foundation. There's the Impetus Trust. There is the Community Action Network Breakthrough Program and CAF, which is the Charities Aid Foundation Venturesome team as well, who are looking at that. And there's more and more popping up around social investment. So there's quite, again, this is not an exhaustive list, but a start that we've tried to make around where some of this financing could come from. There are also commercial or specialist lenders. The Unity Trust Bank has been developing offerings for social enterprise. The Cooperative Bank, Charity Bank, Triodos Bank, CDFIs, and as I mentioned earlier, high street banks have been granting overdrafts to some of the right to request organizations. Clearly, they see this as a potential client base for them, and they are working to develop appropriate products. Potentially, stakeholders are willing to put in some financing, your community, your staff, possibly the local public body might have some money to be able to put into there. And there's others that can also potentially come into play here. Social Finance, the organization Ben currently works for, clearly so. And there's some very big hot topics right now you might have heard about. The Big Society Bank, we'll hopefully know more about that soon. Social Impact Bonds, the Social Stock Exchange. So it's a very interesting area right now in terms of social investment. Lots of things going on, lots of topics being discussed, and hopefully more opportunities will come out of it to help fund some of these organizations at that sort of startup stage, pre-launch, but during development. A couple key conclusions I wanted to bring up. Each journey is very different, and gap funding will definitely vary depending on where you're at, who you're working with, where you're exiting from, and who you might be working with in the future. Do consider your options. Take the time to plan what you think you might need and constantly revisit that because it will change. Gap funding does exist. It may be hard to find. There's no right answer for everybody. But look at diversifying your funding stream so that you could have lots of different options to help fund you. Do look at negotiating hard. We do suggest that. And do consider risk capital because there can be payoffs for you and for whoever puts in the funds. Thank you.